friends. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter. I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
How are you feeling today, my friend?
Oh, sound as a pound, thank you.
Nice Sunday.
Beautiful. Been at the Hoe Street Market with our friend Emily Hatzar of Crafty Glass London.
Who we know is a listener of the pod.
Little shout out for you, pal.
So she's been selling her wares at the market. Alice has been supporting.
In the bar.
Yes. And now we are here on a Sunday night to chat to you about a couple of books that we've read recently. And not just any books. Two very good books.
Did you find them both as joyful and spicy as I did?
Yeah. This is a very joyful and spicy episode. Or maybe not even spicy, because the books are spicy, our takes are not spicy. Our takes are just joyful.
Yeah.
Yeah, loved it. So, should we begin? Let's talk about the first book, because it is out recently, so I feel like we should lead with this one, because I feel like a lot of people will maybe be reading it or have read it recently.
And also, this book was the muse for the episode.
Yes.
It's brand spanking new. I was hearing loads of good things. It has a very clear theme that theoretically should make it very easy to pair with something else, but it's also so unique, it was really hard to pair with something else.
The book is
yes.
Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid. So who had you heard about this book from?
So at the beginning of the year, as I always do, I'm like, you know, just sniffing around, looking at what's coming out in 2019. And it was coming up a lot on like anticipation lists. And then I did a little thread on Twitter of stuff that I personally was looking forward to rather than like pod-wise forward to. And our good friend Erin Kelly commented saying, Daisy Jones and the Six is wicked. Like, you're going to love it. So I had high hopes from the get-go.
Because we like and trust Erin Kelly.
Exactly.
And now it feels like a lot of people I'm seeing are currently reading it.
I feel like it's popping off. And it's only just out in hardback. So I think it's going to be, over summer especially, it will be massive.
So Daisy Jones and the Six, for those of you who do not know, it is a fictionalized oral history of a 70s band that is very similar to, but is not explicitly, Fleetwood Mac. Is that a fair description of what this book is?
Perfect.
Yeah, that is the book in a nutshell. How did you read this book, Alice?
I read it in the traditional hardback form.
I read it by my ears. I listened to the audiobook on Audible, and may I say, was not spawn at all. I just listened to a lot of audiobooks, and that was one that I am so happy to have listened to on audiobook.
So off the back of you talking about how much you enjoyed the audio version, even though I have read the book, I have now just downloaded it on Audible.
It's just
like a little treat for me for later.
It's a true pleasure, because they've got some really good people reading it. Like, different voices are done by people, including Judy Greer, who you may know from things like Arrested Development, and Jennifer Beals, who is Bette from The L Word, and Benjamin Bratt, who is in various like romantic comedies in the noughties. It's just, yeah, it's a really good production. And I found that it helped me keep track of who was who. How did you find that?
So, okay, so if you're not familiar with oral histories, the way that they are kind of, the form of them is that it's all dialogue. It's all basically snippets from interviews kind of pieced together to create one narrative flow. So you don't have any interruptions or very few interruptions from the interviewer slash editor. It's almost like reading a script where each character's name is kind of presented and then you have a little snippet of convo from them. I found it very easy to keep track of who was who because I kind of realised very quickly it didn't massively matter in terms of who the B characters were. So you have Daisy, the kind of antagonist, Billy, who I would say is the protagonist, if you had to slice it up that way, and then a few other key characters, and then the band has like 7 members.
Yeah.
So I learned very quickly you don't need to really care who the other men are.
They're
just like there's the band, you know. They're just
it's like other people in the band who are like almost like they are experiencing the action that the other people are putting into the world.
Yeah.
I found it much easier to follow than I feared I would at the beginning. I was concerned. I'm always concerned with oral histories that I will not keep up with who's who.
So, have you read oral histories before?
I have read, I don't know what it's called, maybe it's called West of Eden, which is an oral history of different families in LA, which is written by Jean Stein, who wrote the kind of most famous oral history of them all, Edie, which when we went to the Faber Soiree the other week and John Savage was talking about his Joy Division oral history, he cited the Edie oral history by Jean Stein as like an influence. And I feel like all oral histories come from that one book. But yeah, I've only actually, I think as far as I know, I've only read one. How about you?
I never read any. I wasn't really familiar with the form at all. And I would compare it to, if you haven't ever read an oral history, it reminded me of like the movie I, Tonya.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That,
like
yeah.
that, like splicing together of interviews.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that, but without the chunks of just straight narrative.
Yeah, it's true. And obviously one of the most interesting things about that as a format is hearing the same thing told by different people and how different perspectives on the same events, you know, it makes a difference.
But I feel like it was done without being, without feeling too kind of cheesy or...
Yeah, tricksy.
Or orchestrated.
Yeah.
Like, if you've, have you read Ian McEwan?
No.
No. Enduring Love is Ian McEwan's book about memory. And in Enduring Love, like, people misremember things and, like, facts become very distorted. And it doesn't quite do that. Like, mostly the stuff that's misremembered is, like, the kind of very insignificant details that just add that kind of texture of it being a book of memory and of, like, retrospective interviews rather than a kind of simultaneous narration where people have different perspectives. So it's things like, I don't know, at a wedding, one person is like, she wore a white t-shirt, and then someone else is like, she wore a yellow crochet top and she looked beautiful.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just these, like, little
yeah.
clashes of facts.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it was never really anything, like, that made it feel gimmicky.
Because it wasn't, it didn't, like, the plot didn't pivot on these things.
Exactly.
It just, like, added texture to the form.
Yeah. The only thing I thought didn't work super well was that narrative perspective shift that comes maybe 90% of the way through the book.
Agreed. Hated it.
Didn't understand why it was
didn't
there.
Need it,
was, it. Do you
Did
think,
not
like, an
it.
Editor told her to do that?
Well, I don't know, because I think, like, the way that the rest of the book unfolded, it worked for me. But that moment, there is, like, a pivot where the interviewer's voice steps in.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was silly. And I actually went back to the beginning of the book to see if I had forgotten about a reference to
that
a crucial
framing,
scene.
Yeah.
And it's not there. It just wasn't there. So it just felt like a kind of a cheap little...
Yeah.
Maybe cheap is the wrong word, because the rest of the book flows beautifully from it. It just felt a little bit unexpected and unnecessary.
Yeah, it felt like it was meant to function as a twist, but was pointless. And was kind of weirdly sentimental.
And also, I feel like if you were really writing an oral history and that thing occurred, that is not how you would put it into the book.
Yeah.
That's just not how, that. And I think that it broke the, what's the phrase? Like my,
suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, it completely busted my suspension of disbelief, because I just don't believe that someone would leave that in wholesale. Like, you would use that to thicken the narrative. Like, you'd use it to sell the fucking book.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So, yeah, that I would say is my only criticism of the book. Otherwise, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. I thought it flowed really well. I thought it was totally plausible. I felt like I could be reading the story of real people. I felt that it had, like, kind of real-life richness. Yeah.
And something I liked about it as well, so have you read, so we've talked about oral histories, have you read many memoirs of rock bands?
No.
Have you read any?
Maybe. Oh, I read, it's not, I don't really know how you characterise it, but the only one I've knowingly, to my memory, read is Touching from a Distance, the Ian Curtis one.
Yes.
But I read that a long time ago.
His wife.
Or his daughter, I can't remember. Deborah
Curtis.
By his wife, yeah.
It's his wife, yeah.
So yeah, that's the one. That's the one I know.
And so the other one, I feel like one of the most popular memoirs, or it's not really a memoir, I guess it's kind of positioned as an autobiography, but it's not really. It's ghostwritten. Motley Crue, The Dirt.
And I had a feeling Netflix, you were going to say that. Yeah,
the Netflix movie has just dropped, which I'm very excited to watch. And that's kind of been like my one of my kind of primary forays into music or rock biographies. And what I really enjoyed about Daisy Jones and the Six is like looking into that songwriting
process and
world, like that process. Whereas a lot of the books that I've read, I also the Marilyn Manson one, Long Hard Road Out of Hell, they kind of focus very much on like the fame and the mess and the addiction and the groupies and the all the fucking up. Whereas with Daisy Jones and the Six, all of that happens to the protagonist. I'm calling him the protagonist, but you know, the man. It all happens very early on, like in the very first little chunk. And then he spends the rest of the book sober and struggling with his demons.
And like trying to atone for all the things he did in the supposedly fun bit.
Yeah. And like I think of Daisy Jones as the antagonist, I guess, because she is the character that disrupts his order.
Yeah, and his ability to like get his shit together. And I'd say she was the one character that I kind of have maybe less positive feelings about how she was constructed as a character, because I feel like all the other characters, all the kind of, I'd say the three other characters that are fairly significant in this story, I kind of believed in them as people, whereas she was just like, everything about her was just like that almost cliched, cool, troubled girl who was just always so sexy, and everything about, even when she was like imperfect, she was so perfect. And that I just didn't really buy her as human in some ways. That was like the only character that I was like, I just didn't really enjoy hearing about stuff from her perspective, because I didn't feel like she had any kind of, I don't know, human softness, weakness, weirdness, insecurity, or even like the things that were meant to be like insecurity about her were a bit kind of cliched, unhappy girl stuff.
So that's the thing, I feel like she does have a lot of weakness and weirdness and insecurity. I guess the problem with the character of Daisy Jones is that she always fails upwards.
She
never truly
suffers or in any meaningful way, apart from she doesn't get like what she wants romantically, but even that, I feel like, is kind of a fuel for her art, or I don't know, that there was just something about that character. Maybe it's just Jennifer Beals' voice. I don't know.
No, I guess the problem is that you don't really, if I remember correctly anyway, I don't feel like you really learn anything about her, like, past.
Well, you know that, like, she has these parents, these kind of, like, really artsy parents.
Am I just completely forgetting about that?
I don't know. Yeah, so her parents are, like, an English artist and, like, this French woman. Can't remember what the French lady's role in the greater world other than being French is. But who just kind of let her do what she wants, and they're not very involved in her life. And it's, like, that, I don't know, it, every kind of imagined obstacle that's put up against her, I still feel contributes to her air of like being cool and like carefree, or I don't, yeah.
On the other hand though, I feel like for a 1970s very thin, very beautiful rock star, that is kind of how she would have been constructed anyway.
Yeah
like I guess
that's from whence she would have come.
Yeah, like the medium, because it's an oral history, there isn't really room to do anything other than present them. It's supposed to be, like, the messy truth. But, I mean, how messy can you really be if you're literally still being lauded as a genius and beautiful when you're, like, about as coked up as you can be, floating in a swimming pool in a fucking kimono? Like,
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it was just all those bits that I was like, oh, this again. You know, it just, I don't know. It was
there's
a
no
bit
scene where she's, like, shitting herself. Exactly. Or passed out dribbling it.
Yeah, like, even when she was, like, meant to be doing this messy shit, I was still like, oh, but it's so, you know, beautiful.
But then that, it was very Almost Famous, isn't yeah. it? Like, the in Almost Famous, even when the fucking, it went Penny Lane, even when the 16-year-old is overdosing, she's still dainty and beautiful.
Yeah.
And even the messiest moment in that movie, she's still kind of put on a pedestal of perfection.
True.
Because we love a tragic beauty.
It's true. So yeah, those are my feelings. Almost entirely good, with some reservations, as is healthy.
I feel like that's more like a disclaimer as well. It's like...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know. Because, yeah, now that you've said that, like, of course you're right that she is mythical in her perfection. But I feel like that is just what we do to celebrities.
True.
Anyway. Make you think.
It does make you think. Celebrity culture. Okay. And it didn't make me not enjoy the book. And it didn't make me think that it was a bad book. It just, you know... Just a thing that I felt. But yeah, I think this is a great book that is very different to other stuff that's around in lots of ways.
I don't think I've ever read anything like it.
Yeah, if fiction you know, wise. Yeah, if you know of like fictionalized oral histories, we'd be interested in hearing about it. At least I would. I'm sure you would too.
Yeah.
It would have to be as done as well as that.
I was like, yeah, me. I probably wouldn't read them.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very tough medium in some ways, I think, because it strips back everything that I like about fiction.
Yeah,
like it's
yeah, yeah,
all
yeah.
reported speech, so automatically you are one layer away from the action. Like there is absolutely no frills whatsoever because it's all speech. Yeah. It's all people describing things that have already happened. The only person who I think is allowed to add like a bit of color, aside from the two songwriters who you forgive for being a bit arty, is Karen.
Yeah,
she also like provides a little bit of. Kind of texture, like a little bit of kind of aesthetic.
She was my fave thing in the book. I loved reading her bits the most.
Who voiced her?
Judy Greer.
Okay.
Who has such a, you know, characterful voice and is great. But yeah, I just found she was a very, like, obviously she's this incredibly sexy, appealing woman in a really cool band, but I still felt like she had weakness and desires and...
And also in struggles. Like, I thought she was a really interesting character because she, for example, the album cover of, like, their breakout hit, like, their Rumours.
Yeah.
The album cover is a picture of Daisy Jones and Billy Who's It, whatever. Like, a shot of them caught very close.
I'm just rearranging myself.
I'll let you settle. So the album cover of their Rumours is Daisy Jones and, is his name Billy?
Yeah.
I'm calling him Billy. It's Billy. It's like, and it's so well described, like Daisy wearing these like pair of little tiny shorts and a white tank top with no bra on. You can see her nipples and like the way they're angled. And I love Karen. Karen often interjects in these like descriptions of Daisy's sexuality and the way that she kind of presents herself. Karen was obviously kind of battling her own demons about how she wanted to be perceived as a woman in a rock band, and I felt like that voice was so necessary and I think balanced out some of the kind of ludicrous hyperbole of the myth of Daisy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Karen's there saying, I literally never wanted to be that. Yeah, she looked fucking beautiful, but
I went to great pains to construct this other image.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's a really cool, fun book, and a lot of people would enjoy it.
It's also the kind of book that you can take on holiday and like read in a day.
Yes.
Which I love. I love holiday in a day books.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those. And you know, it's got kind of pain and suffering in it, but I didn't feel like it was ever kind of unpleasantly dark or...
No, it's not distressing.
No, which is nice, you know, because...
We read a lot of dark
shit. Yeah, exactly. I read a lot of pain and suffering. And it was nice that that was kind of contained. Shall we move on to our next pick?
So, book number two. After much agonising, we decided to go with one of my all-time favourites, A Visit from the Goon Squad.
By Jennifer Egan. It came to me, you know. I don't know why it came, you know. I'm not normally the one that thinks of the shit that we should do on this esteemed podcast.
It's true. This was your suggestion.
A very rare thing. But yeah, I just thought, it would be interesting to think about it with other kind of fictionalized music industry stuff. And I know there's a lot, as we will discuss, there's so much more to A Visit from the Goon Squad than the music industry. But I just felt like I wanted to revisit that book because it came out in like 2010, 2011, which is long enough ago that, you know, I haven't reread it since it came out. But it might not have kind of aged well in those intervening years, and or it might have, because I feel like it was one of those books that everyone read when it came out, but now I feel we have kind of, it's in that period where it hasn't been revisited yet. So I thought it was a good time to think about it.
So I have a very different experience with that book. My friend Eugene Noon, one of my favourite people.
Who I met when I met you.
Yeah, and he described meeting you as like meeting Beyonce.
That is so nice.
He heard so much about you and then there you were.
And actually, that was at a music festival.
Oh my god, it was. It was at Primavera. And was Beth there as well?
Beth was also there.
Look at that. The meeting of minds.
Truly.
But Eugene recommended the book to me and I must have read it around 2011-ish.
The year that we met.
The year that we met. And the year the book came out, apparently.
Yeah.
But I have not... My experience of that book was not that everyone was reading it. I read it and absolutely loved it. I reread it this year for the first time and, oh my god, if I thought I loved it, rereading it now, as the mature lady that I am today, I would die for this book.
It's such a mad achievement. Like, what is her mind?
So, to nutshell it, A Visit from the Goon Squad is a book told in 13 short stories that are all more closely linked than any other collection that I've ever read that has interlinking short stories. Some people would argue that it is a novel. Others argue that it's a collection. You would have to read it and make your own mind up. No character appears more than maybe 6 times maximum in a story. And the way in which they're linked is all through characters whose paths have crossed, but maybe 1 degree removed.
Yeah.
So, like, you might have the perspective of, for example, a woman who is the assistant to a hotshot music producer. The next chapter is, like, the man who, like, made his career what it is. The next one, however, would be, like, some chick who knew the first guy in high school. Like, it's all just, like, very loosely connected, but you end up learning about the lives of maybe, what, half a dozen people?
Yeah. From different perspectives over different time periods.
And yeah, it covers like 40 years.
Yeah. And in like kind of various guises as well. Like people who are one thing in one part and then something completely different in another. But yeah, I'd say the way, you know, it's about a record producer and it's on those grounds that I thought that it would be kind of an interesting one. A fictional record producer and a fictional band, you know? That would be a nice little pair.
Who do you think of as the main character? If you had to pick a main character in Visit from the Goon Squad, who would you choose?
Purely by virtue of it opening with her, I would say it would be Sasha.
Same. Yeah. And it ends with Sasha.
And it does end with her.
In one way.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a book that, I cried probably 3 times. It just gets me. Yeah. It just gets me. And one of the main themes of it is the passing of time. And, I mean, there are at least 3 moments where characters reflect on where did the time go. And it just gets me.
Yeah, and that's what the title is.
Yeah, the Goon Squad being age, right?
Yeah, like, or just time. Like, yeah. Which is weird and cool, because I don't know, I feel like nobody says that. I've never heard that outside of that book.
No, I don't know if it is an expression that exists or if she made it up. I assume she made it up.
Because someone in the book says it as if it is like an expression, but yeah. I don't think it is. Yeah, it's just such a like wild book. What was your favourite bit?
Oh, fuck. Okay, so my favourite story, so there's 13 stories. My 2 favourite stories... No, my 3 favourite... I'm allowed 3.
Because it's you.
It's okay, my 3 favourite stories. So first of all, the Africa...
That was so good.
I don't know, I can't remember what country they're in. Is it Kenya?
Yes.
Yeah, so the Kenya story, because it's so gripping in so many ways, and I feel like when I read it just, 8 years ago, I enjoyed the tension of the lion moment.
Yep.
as an adult then, but like as an old lady now, the sexual tension is the thing I enjoyed the most about that story. My other favorite is the like the second or third story in the collection, which is Rhea's perspective.
Yeah, from when they're teenagers. Yeah.
Teenagers in like the late 70s.
Going to gigs and meeting old men and yeah.
Yeah. And then my third favourite has completely fallen out of my brain.
It'll come back.
It'll come back to me. Shit, what was my other one? Because I had my two favs and then the safari story, I was like...
That's got to be in there.
Yeah. What was your favourite?
My favourite is the one with the, like, the general. I just think that's so brilliant and plausible, and it has so many, like, weird, fun details. Like, I think one of the funniest things I have read is this, the kind of anecdote about the party that this woman threw and the boiling oil, and like I thought that was so funny.
A woman who runs her own PR agency throws this party that's like Met Gala level of
fancy Morrison,
and one of the things she sets up is these like trays of water with colored oil floating on them underneath lights, which I'm assuming like casts, you know, that like, I think of Jimi Hendrix when I think of it, you know, that like oil effect?
The like swirling. Yeah.
And basically, so it casts that effect down on the crowd and she fucks up because the trays are made of plastic and they melt. So all of these like A-listers are just showered with like boiling hot water and oil.
And it becomes this enormous like celebrity scandal, but also like criminal liability thing
like
for
her. Fucks her, yeah. fucks her career.
And I don't know why, but I just found that so madly plausible, but also funny. And yeah, I love that whole story about how her new job is to rehabilitate this general from a kind of, I assume, someone who's probably done war crimes and
has absolutely done war crimes. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I thought that was my fave bit.
Also, what I really love about that story, and this is my question, if I had 3 minutes with Jennifer Egan in a room, my question would be, how did you decide what warranted a full story and what was just an anecdote within a story?
Yeah, like, why didn't we get the account of that party?
Why wasn't that party a story?
True.
I mean, it didn't need to be.
But also, did it...
By that logic, nothing, you know, needs anything, everything. You know, you can... Yeah. I remembered my other fav. My other fav was Rob's story.
Remind me.
Rob was...
Oh, yeah, the guy. Yeah, I know the guy.
So, yeah, there's no real way to explain it without doing a spoiler, but...
I know which one
it is. The perspective of a young man living in New York, and he spends a night with one of his friends' boyfriends. He's clearly very much in love with this man, or at least in lust with him, and they have this, like, drug-fueled night that... ends in tragedy.
Indeed.
And for me, that story sums up what an incredible writer she is, because the way that it fits into the entire narrative is just perfect and tragic and beautiful. And I don't know, it makes me think of like the way that mortality is, you know, that some one of the worst things that can happen to you, like losing someone that you really care about, that what within 10 years that just becomes one of the stories that you have to tell.
Yeah.
And that person kind of bobs beneath the surface and everything carries on without them.
Yeah.
It literally makes the whole book just kind of breaks me and also rebuilds me.
It also contains one of literally the most formally imaginative and wild things I have ever experienced in a book. The slides.
The PowerPoint.
Isn't that so cool?
I'm sipping my little drink because I don't know if I love it, to be perfectly honest.
I loved it. I love that bit.
I don't know if I love it. I find it a little hard to believe.
Yeah.
It should be live journal. That's what I'm saying. It should be. It's a character who's like a 12-year-old girl and she keeps a diary in the form of PowerPoint. And this is supposed to be, like, what year would you say it's meant to be? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's basically definitely post-2010, I would say. or maybe it's around 2010. Yeah. I can't remember if there's any, like, anchors, you know, cultural signifiers to tell us where we're supposed to be. I just had a little bit unrealistic. She would have a fucking Tumblr.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was just, like, a kind of weird kid using the tools on their desktop to, like, express themselves.
That's what my husband said when I was showing him, because I was on the tube reading that section. He was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, with my book sideways, yeah. You know, like, flipping through it. And yet he said me describing it reminded him of being a kid with your computer that's not connected to the internet, and so you're
using the tools that, like, you have.
Doing weird shit with Word or whatever. Yeah. Like. But I don't know if the time-wise, if that fits in, like,
with the reality of...
Because I was doing that in, like, and I assume you were doing that between, like, the 90s and the early noughties.
Yeah.
PowerPoint wasn't a thing then. By the time PowerPoint was a thing, I feel like the internet was also a thing. So you would be writing disgusting sex fiction Tumblr.
Speak for yourself. But the thing I think is so interesting and done better than I've ever heard anyone do is, like, the end, which is her imagination of the future.
Oh, wow.
It's
yeah.
so believable. Like, it's even 10 years on from, well, like 9 years on from her writing it, we're more and more living in the future that she kind of imagined. But that's even more... It's...
But, like, specifically the fact that this younger woman, as she develops a professional and then a personal relationship with this slightly older man, who's the narrator of the story, she struggles to have conversations out loud for, like, more than, like, a few minutes. She's more comfortable texting. But it's already texting. It's, like, called something different. But, like...
Teeing.
Yeah. She's like, so she's more comfortable communicating digitally, even if they're in the same space.
Yeah.
And that felt very... Like, I remember in 2011, that felt very poignant. It felt like a believable future. And I feel like even more so. Like, yeah. It
and the way that there's all that... Makes a lot of sense. That anxiety within him about exposing his child to... technology, and, like, we don't let them use the handset for, you know, blah, blah. And, you know, the stuff about influence, that's essentially what they're getting people to do in that story is, like, social influencing.
The only thing with it is that it's, like, babies are the influencers.
Yeah.
The pointers. They call babies pointers, right? Because they...
Point at things. Like their, yeah.
The extent of their...
Because obviously part of it is, like, kind of ridiculous, but a lot of that world is very believable and has, in some ways, come true.
And, you know, I can lean into pointers.
Yeah.
As, like, a concept.
Yeah, a marketing concept.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love this book.
What did you think of... Because as I was rereading it, ahead of you because I had the physical copy, so I was reading it first.
Indeed.
The one thing I did not like was the suicide tour.
Oh, yeah, no, that I, no. So I, that was, see, it took me a while to even remember because yeah. It was the bit that I was just least engaged with.
I was very relieved that it was only contained within that story, and there's yeah. a reference later, and it doesn't become, like, the push of the whole novel. But the suicide tour, just to explain what it is a rock star who is, like, past his prime, has gained a lot of weight, his health has suffered immensely from his wild youth, and he has this idea to, like, create this kind of art based on a tour that he hopes and expects will kill him.
Yeah.
But it's just very fatphobic.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's very fatphobic, and I didn't enjoy that.
I never enjoy that. You know me. We yeah. never want to read any of that shit.
Exactly. And even though I feel like the actual concept felt very believable, like, this man who feels like he has this maybe one more shot at doing something that will be significant.
The way he was described.
The way he was, yeah. Then it wasn't the concept that I had a problem with. It was the
treatment
author's
of that character,
voice
yeah.
describing, like, his chair, his movements, the world that he was in. I didn't enjoy that. So heads up, if you really don't want to read anything that's fatphobic, I found that kind of fatphobic.
Agree. Have you read Manhattan Beach?
No, I have not. I have actually only read... A Visit from the Goon Squad.
Me too. Maybe we should expand our Jennifer Egan oeuvre.
I do. I have other books written by her. I have like three or four. I don't know why I haven't read anything else. I think it was from the Goon Squad. I read it and enjoyed it. Rereading it, I am moved beyond words by how much I love it. So maybe now I'm finally ready.
Now's your time to shine.
Just to, you know, grow up. Level up.
Level up with Jennifer Egan.
What are you reading right now?
Right now, I am reading Constellations by Sinead Gleeson.
Ooh, I've heard good things.
I'm loving it. My only issue with it is entirely personal, and it is that I am very, 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 very averse to blood.
You're very squeamish, aren't
you? I'm very, very squeamish, specifically about things about blood. And there is a lot of blood in the beginning. I'd say between pages sort of 30 and 70 is very bloody. So I was reading it on the tube today, and I know when I get stressed out, my legs feel sweaty.
Oh.
Yes, and I had the hot legs. It gave me hot legs by the time I got off, yes. She's an incredible writer. It's so interesting. It's so thoughtful. She is wonderful and amazing. And it is entirely my beef with blood that is making me, funny about it. But I cannot wait to read more because I assume the blood bit is nearly over.
So I read the first story in that collection of essays, and I really enjoyed it. I'm excited to read more. I had to put it down because I always have so much that I have to read.
Yeah.
So if it's something like an essay collection that I know I can read one and come back to it.
Exactly, and that's nice. Like, I think that's a real blessing. I think it's great. I cannot wait to read more of it. It's out on the 4th of April, which is soon, a week after this. Next week, in many ways.
I am reading Nicole Flattery, Show Them a Good Time.
What is it?
It's a short story collection.
Of course it is.
And I'm reading it for a very specific purpose. It's because tomorrow, aka today, when the episode drops, I have the honour of doing a short story salon at Gower Street, Waterstones, with Nicole and our good friend of the pod, Ellie Williams.
Oh, what a dream.
Of Atrib fame.
Giant Rat of Sumatra fame.
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe I tried to make you come to the bloody cinema with me tomorrow. How rude of me.
As if. So yeah, I'm finishing that collection, I guess, probably tonight. And then I don't know what I'm going to read next. I have this big old stack of fun.
The world is your oyster.
I'm jazzed.
I hope the salon is great.
Oh, it will bang.
It will bang.
Always does.
And like any room with you and Ellie Williams in, it's just a place that everyone should be.
Oh, stop. Imagine.
Well, I've had a delightful time.
Me too.
Are you happy?
Yes, I am. And I finished my Jack Daniels and raspberry flavoured Coke Zero, which I've been enjoying. So it's
not Spawn.
Not Spawn. I wish. Imagine if I was Spawn by Jack Daniels and specifically raspberry Coke Zero.
It's been a delight. I have enjoyed being visited by this Goon Squad. We will see you again. Goodbye, my friends.
Bye.